Governor Scott Walker has released his two-year state budget plan back in February. That included a big spending increases for public schools and the UW system, along with $500 million in borrowing for the state's transportation budget deficit. Last week, the state's powerful Joint Committee on Finance pulled 83 pieces of policy out of the governor's budget and completely nixed the governor's plan for road funding. Now the Joint Finance Committee is taking the budget on the road for a series of public hearings around the state. Next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, two of those will be right here in western Wisconsin. So today, we're speaking with two lawmakers from our region to get their take on what they like and what they don't like in this evolving state budget bill. That's this hour on the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this dreary Monday morning in western Wisconsin. In studio, I'd like to welcome State Senator Kathleen Vinehout. She represents the 31st State Senate District. She's based in Alma. Kathleen Vinehout, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Good to have you. Joining us by phone is Romaine Quinn. He's a Republican state representative for the 75th Assembly District. He is based in Chautauqua. Romaine Quinn, welcome back.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Rich.
It's our pleasure. Listeners, we'd like to hear from you. Chime in on what your first impressions are of the state budget, what you think about the Joint Finance Committee actions. Are you planning to attend any of these hearings? We've got one in Ellsworth. We've got one in Spooner in our region. And if so, what are you going to tell lawmakers on the Joint Finance Committee? 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. Also, if you feel like making a statement or offering a question, but you don't want to do it on air, that's okay. We've got your back. Go to Facebook. Check out the West Side Facebook page. So first off, I'd like to start with Romaine Quinn. We got a lot of news last week, budget-wise, and this might have been before, but I read about a report from the Nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau that suggests Governor Scott Walker's budget proposal at this point, the way it is, and the way it was perhaps before the Joint Finance Committee got their hands on it, but it would leave the state with a $1 billion structural deficit by 2021 because the governor wants to increase spending beyond what current revenues can pay for, according to the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, excuse me. So I'm wondering, where do you think lawmakers on the Republican side of the aisle will take the budget from here?
Yeah, and as you know, it's early in the process. And I'm glad you mentioned the Joint Finance hearings. Excuse me, I'm still getting over my last cold.
That's all right.
So, we'll all get a crack at it. I think right now, like I said, it's still early to tell. They're doing the listening sessions, taking input from the public. And what we hear is based on, I think, what some of Joint Finance is going to act on. So, like I said, this part's early. Every so often, we're updated on an economic forecast, which will project revenues. Which that number could change. I mean, a 2% or 3% or 4% growth, and you're talking about, $1 billion. So it's early to tell, and frankly, I don't give a lot of weight to numbers early on until we get to a point where we can see a budget in more its entirety, what actually could be voted on. Then let's really focus on that number. Mm-hmm. But a lot's going to change. A lot's up in the air. And again, the Joint Finance Committee is going to be given more economic forecasts in the near future, that number will change as well. So I wouldn't get hung up on that right now because I think a lot is going to change.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. The Legislative Fiscal Bureau report is based on if revenues at this point don't change whatsoever. And Lord knows a lot can happen either way with revenues. So, Kathleen Vinehout, I'm wondering where you think you've got limited ability, the Democrats do, to make a whole lot of changes in the state budget. But where do you think lawmakers will take the budget from its starting point?
Well, as you mentioned, there are a lot of problems in the budget and a lot of problems that the governor is leaving for the next governor and the next legislature. He's spending a lot at the very end of the budget going into the election of 2018. He's giving state employees who haven't had a raise in many, many years, he's giving them a 2% raise right before the election and then another 2% raise right before the end of the last fiscal year. He's refinancing debt, and those debt payments are coming due in the next budget. He's got $78 million in one-time money from a Volkswagen settlement that he's overspending money for the state's welfare program, what we call TANF, which is where W-2 gets its money. He's got penalties from the federal government that he has to be paying for noncompliance in some of the federal programs. And then, as you mentioned, for a long time, the Department of Transportation has been spending more than they've been bringing in. Take that and the way that he's woven in the supposed savings from the self-insurance plan for state employees and tied that very carefully to the money for K-12. I think there are a lot of changes that both the Republicans and the Democrats want to make. And there are conversations going on right now, even between the Democrats and the Republicans, on how maybe we can deal with the transportation budget in a way that hasn't been dealt with before. But just a comment on the projected revenues. Sometimes there are new projected revenues that come out in May. Sometimes there are not. When I look at the pattern that the Fiscal Bureau has been giving us on the projected revenues for the next budget, they've been dropping. So the most recent projected revenue for the new budget is a little over 2%. 2 years ago, it was pegged at a little bit over 4%. And the last three Fiscal Bureau estimates on revenue for this budget have been headed the wrong direction. They've been heading down, not up. So I think this means that the economy is not recovering, and for many reasons, Wisconsin is lagging the national average.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in if you've got a question or a comment for our lawmakers. They are Romaine Quinn, Republican State Representative for the 75th Assembly District, based in Chautauqua; Kathleen Weinhout, Democratic State Senator for the 31st Senate District, based in Alma. 1-800-228-5615. Speaking of that, I want to kind of play off of what you just said, Kathleen, about transportation and as far as the Joint Finance Committee. As I mentioned in the intro, the Joint Finance Committee has a lot of power when it comes to budgets. In fact, at the final hours, they can kind of create law on the fly. But one of the things that they did was completely pull Governor Walker's roads plan, the transportation funding plan that the governor had included in the budget, which included $500 million in borrowing and delaying some road projects. They are starting from scratch. So where do we begin? And you mentioned that Republicans are talking with Democrats, as they should. And what do you think will come out of this transportation-wise? I mean, are we going to see both parties pushing hard for a revenue increase? We've heard some of that discussion. Is it actually going to happen?
Well, no one knows if it's actually going to happen, and there are different ideas on different sides of the aisle. The former Secretary of Transportation put together in his last budget 24 different issue papers on how we might be able to come up with a way to balance the transportation budget. Some of those ideas, to me, are so simple and so easy to get acceptance from the public. A good example is that the state owns or has significant ownership in over 700 miles of freight rail line, and the former secretary proposed just a modest $10 a car fee for those freight rail lines to use the state-owned rail. I have never had a town hall meeting where people on both sides of the aisle didn't agree with this. It seems like if the state's going to invest a great deal of money in borrowing to buy new rail and to maintain the rail that it's got, that the railroads ought to pay their own way. And when I think about this budget, for example, there's even more money that's going into borrowing for the state rail program. So I for freight rail. So I think there's a lot of options and there are a lot of different ideas. I think the Democrats are probably closer to making a modest increase in the gas tax and vehicle fees than the Republicans. But that said, there's a lot of Chippewa Valley Republicans that have been very open about different ideas and how to do this. And it really has to be done. There's a long problem here, and the problem is that the numbers that the Fiscal Bureau have given us is that at the end of the budget, 22 cents of every dollar that is spent by the transportation fund will go to debt, but that number doesn't include the amount of transportation debt that's being paid for by the general fund, which is where we pay for schools and healthcare and the UW. And when you include that debt that got shifted off to the general fund, it's more like 28 cents of every dollar. Well, that just can't be sustained. So it has to be fixed, and I think lawmakers on both sides of the aisle realize that, and pulling out all of the governor's pieces that he added gives the legislature a blank slate to start building a budget that they can get the votes to pass.
Do you, if the state DOT raises rates for carriers that are using the state-owned tracks, wouldn't that sour relationships with this industry that you know we want to invest in other parts of the state? Wouldn't that create a bad taste in the mouth?
Well, certainly that's probably been the reason why it hasn't been done. But I haven't seen any railroads that are making plans to go bankrupt. They seem to be quite profitable. So at least we should have the discussion. And this is one of 24 different options. So I don't think anything should be off the table. I think we ought to talk about all the ideas that the former secretary gave us in the last budget, as well as any of the ideas that the Democrats and Republicans have. And I have to give the Assembly Republicans credit because they've been out there coming up with new ideas. And there's a lot of new ideas. And that's what we're all about, is listening to new ideas and trying to figure this out and sounding those ideas out in our town hall meetings with the public. And people ought to weigh in.
Representative Quinn, Republicans are talking about gas taxes, and specifically Speaker Voss. I think John Nygren might have talked about the need to raise revenues. So since the Joint Finance Committee pulled the governor's transportation plan from the budget, we're starting from scratch. Do you think that, first of all, where do you think Republicans will want to start from? And do you think that revenue is going to be a talking point throughout this process?
Absolutely. And I think that was a good first step so we can have those real conversations that need to be had. And I'm glad Senator Vinehout mentioned it. But, you know, my caucus, I wouldn't say they're any more liberal by any means than the Senate. Gosh, excuse me.
That's all right.
But we recognize the issue, and I don't think it's a conservative position to continue to bond at levels we've been bonding, and we've been making that argument. So we've provided real leadership, or I believe in some instances the Senate have been willing to go along with the governor's position, and we even said, you know, we're willing to cut taxes an equal amount if it means we can just prioritize and invest more in transportation to reduce borrowing, keep projects on track. And unfortunately, that goalpost has kind of been moved out from under us in these negotiations. So I think removing the transportation piece out and looking at that separately, I think is a good thing. So we can have a fair and open discussion about that. And so we can really come to terms with what money is needed for these projects. And again, roads aren't Democrat or Republican. We all use them. And I think no matter how conservative you are, you understand that infrastructure is a basic function of government. So it's very simple. How much are you willing to spend, and what kind of roads do you expect from your state government? So there's a lot of options on the table, and we said we're open to a lot of them, and I look forward to that conversation, and I think that was an important, like I said, first step by taking that piece out of the overall budget discussion so we can have that openness and honesty about it.
Now, Representative Quinn, when you say that the goalpost has been changed a little bit with regard to the governor's position on revenue increases, what are you referring to?
Sure. So originally the governor came out and said absolutely no increase in gas taxes and frankly no new revenue for transportation unless there is an equal offset somewhere else. So our caucus said, fine, we'll absolutely do that. So at the starting point, we'll figure out a way, you know, within the various means, we, you know, Senator Vinehout listed, there's 24 proposals from the previous secretary on how to raise revenue, as long as there's an equal offset in spending somewhere else, because the governor's position is right in the sense that we are still, I think, roughly the 16th highest tax state in the country. So we would meet him on that. So we said we will reduce the tax burden by that $300 million somewhere else, whether it be income tax or so on and so forth. Unfortunately, that was an option, but now it just recently come to light that even if we do that, the governor's office has no interest now in raising revenue for transportation, from my understanding, his position. So for me, it feels like the goalposts have been moved when we try to meet that requirement. So, but again, the process is still early, and now that it's separated from the budget, it's a lot. It's going to require a lot more honesty because we can't just say we're voting up or down on the whole budget and we just had to plug our nose for transportation. It's now outside of that where I think we can have real conversations. And I think the only reason it's gone that far is because our Assembly Republican caucus is willing to look at the problem and try to find real solutions. So I'm proud of my colleagues in that sense.
Now, is there a way, if the governor says he's going to veto, and we've got the line item veto in Wisconsin, so it's a pretty powerful veto pen that the governor wields. If he says he's going to veto any kind of increase in gas taxes or vehicle registration fees, what are the options? Can the legislature overturn that? Would it have to be the Senate, or does the whole legislature overturn that? Romaine Quinn.
And I think it just depends on how you want to write it into the budget. I think there's ways you can do that. And again, I'm fairly new to this process, and sure. I do not sit on joint finance, but I don't think this is the end all where he can use his pen to prevent any more future revenues. And just to be fair, you know, I had the new Secretary of Transportation in my office. I think he's going to do an excellent job. He's got quite the problem on his hands. And the argument coming from that office is that we have enough money. We've just been taking on too many projects. We've bitten off more than we can chew. And if you guys would just wait, let's get through these projects. And once these mega projects are off the books, there will be the revenue to invest in rural roads and the roads that, frankly, are the reason that statistically our roads are so poor. The problem is, like every budget, is making sure we can actually direct that money where it needs to go. And it's easy to say, let's get through these southeastern mega projects, and then we'll have more money for your county and town roads later. But unfortunately, when later comes, I feel like we'll be in the same boat where we begin to enumerate new projects, large projects, in the southeastern part of the state. So if there is any new increase, I know some of our rural members and myself are interested in changing the disbursement of those funds to ensure that going forward, if we vote for a gas tax increase, you know, with an offsetting, a tax reduction, I'm not doing that just to send more money to southeastern projects while we watch our own infrastructure in our districts deteriorate.
Right. 800-228-5615 is the number to call. If you've got a question or a comment, I wanted to get your take on this, Kathleen Vinehout, because I believe you're still on the audit committee, correct? And there's been calls for a transportation department audit. So what do you think you'd find? I mean, because there's already some talk about a number of projects that were the costs were underestimated, et cetera.
Yeah, we do have an audit that gives us a lot of insight into the budgeting problems of the Department of Transportation. And the audit found that over the life of many projects, there was as much as a four-fold increase if you compared the original estimate to either the most recent estimate or in cases where the projects were completed, the final numbers. And this was quite a shock for the legislature. In addition to supporting with numbers, the stories that Representative Quinn and I have heard from local people who are town supervisors and county highway commissioners that have told us how there's less and less money to do the cost of asphalt is increasing and there's less money and less amount of roads that can be done. And so that now they're looking at replacing the roads over about a 50-year time period instead of a 20 or 30-year time period. And by that time, the roads, in some cases, like in Jackson County, they've turned back to gravel. So there's a lot of evidence that shows that the roads are deteriorating, especially the local roads and the state roads in the rural areas. And then there are huge problems with the state DOT making decisions that I believe the legislature should have made. And just one example is the road project from Madison to the state line to Beloit, and that part of I-90/94 was made to be from six lanes to eight lanes, I believe. And some of those decisions are in expanding the number of lanes, especially around the city of Janesville, they added significantly to the costs, and there was never a legislative decision that was made. And some of this blame lies with the past legislatures who, over the years, never asked the question, how much has this project changed since it was first authorized, or the word the state uses is enumerated, and how much more is it costing us? Instead, the state legislature only looked at a slice. So add up all the projects and put them into big, little, and medium categories, and the slice is the two-year cost, and we never looked at what we would call the longitudinal cost, the cost over time, and many of these projects take a long time. So that was a real shock, and right now, because of that work that the audit committee did, there is a lot of ongoing follow-up work that the audit committee is doing on holding the Department of Transportation's feet to the fire and delivering the documents that would help us understand what the current commitments are and how they've changed, and see that there's something called the Transportation Project Commission that has met only like 9 times in 16 years that's supposed to provide oversight. They haven't really provided the oversight they needed to, but every 6 months to have those reports come back to the legislature so we can track exactly what's happening on all the different projects, which frankly should have been done 30 years ago.
My apologies. The audit has already been wrapped up.
It was made public in January. We had a big audit committee hearing in February, but I think you're right to ask, where are we going? Because once an audit happens, this opens the door for the audit bureau to stay in that agency and to have a number of follow-up reports that are both done by the agency and then checked by the audit committee, and have that the people from the Department of Transportation keep coming back to the audit committee. So hopefully we'll have more hearings and we'll be able to get more information as we go forward.
And a quick plug to my hometown. Dave Ross was the mayor of Superior, where I hail from. Anyway, we're going
to
take
his job to fix this mess.
it's a big job ahead for whoever holds that seat. 1-800-228-5615. We're going to take our first break here on the West Side. I'm joined by Kathleen Vinehout. She's a state senator from the 31st Senate District, and Romaine Quinn. He's a Republican state representative from the 75th District. Give us a call, 800-228-5615. Gordy is on the line. Hang tight. We'll get to you right after this.
Support for WPR comes from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Partnering with local businesses to bolster the dairy industry, UW-Madison and Wisconsin work together for a stronger state. More at reinvestuw.org. Support also comes from Neff's Pianos in Eau Claire, announcing a spring event now in progress, featuring fine used pianos and restored Yamaha pianos. Open for extended hours, and appointments are available at neffspianos.com.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Good Monday morning to you. We're talking about the state budget bill. It's a huge document proposed by the governor, introduced to the legislature. Joint Finance Committee has already taken some items out of the budget, but they're going to have a series of public hearings across the state. After that, then the full legislature gets its hands on the budget. So a lot of kicks at the cat, as it were, coming, but Now is your chance to have your voice heard on it. Next week, there will be two meetings, one in Spooner and one in Ellsworth, where the public can chime in. There are day-long hearings. It's a marathon effort for the Joint Finance Committee. But today we're talking about the state budget with two local state lawmakers. Romaine Quinn is a Republican state representative for the 75th Assembly District. He's based in Chautauqua. Kathleen Weinhout is a Democratic state senator for the 31st Senate District based in Alma. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got a question or a comment. Right now, Gordy and Eau Claire. Gordy and Eau Claire, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Thank you. I was wondering, the moratorium on nuclear waste is going to be over at the end of this year, and the United States Geological Survey has said that northern Wisconsin is an ideal site for nuclear waste to be stored. The governor said that he would certainly consider that. I was wondering if that's going to be his answer to the budget, because the road and rail transportation systems would have to be seriously upgraded to be able to carry that nuclear waste to its site somewhere in northern Wisconsin. And it would also be a huge jobs boost for him and solve the problem of the jobs in northern Wisconsin. I was wondering how both of the guests thought about Wisconsin as the nuclear waste site for the state of Wisconsin, where you can fish in warm water all year and catch fish that glow in the dark. I'll take my comments off air. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate the levity there for a serious subject, Gordy. This is the first I've heard of it. Romaine Quinn, are you aware of any proposals that the governor has, whether it's in the budget or elsewhere, to locate nuclear waste in northern Wisconsin?
Yeah, I have not heard anything of the like. I'd be happy to look into this if the gentleman knows something that I don't know. And he touched on a number of issues. You know, we had a discussion about nuclear energy going forward. And if you look, I mean, just how cheap fossil fuels are, there's nuclear power plants that are closing down all over the place because it's more costly to produce that energy. So I haven't heard that as some secret fix. And even in terms of the job issue, you know, in Northwestern Wisconsin, we've got a workforce issue, not a jobs issue. I've got people that are crying for anyone with a pulse just to walk in the door, pass a drug test, and show up every day, and they'll start you at $16 an hour, no skills. So, you know, we have a workforce shortage issue, and I think the budget addresses a lot of those too. So, but back to the original question, I have not heard any comments or talk of using northern Wisconsin or my district in particular as a depository for nuclear waste.
All right, Romaine Quinn, we were starting to lose you there a little bit. The cell reception was breaking up, but just in case, I want to give you the 1-800-228-5615 is the number. That's for listeners, but also for a state representative if the connection is dropped.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Kathleen Weinhout, have you got any input on any – have you heard about any nuclear waste sites in northern Wisconsin?
No, I haven't, Gordy, but I've been picking through the details of the budget, and I did find a little provision under the Department of Administration that eliminates the state's involvement in something called the Midwest Interstate Low-Level Radioactive Waste Compact, which is a lot of words that basically is an agreement between the upper Midwest states, Iowa, Indiana, Minnesota, Missouri, Ohio, and Wisconsin, that provides for the cooperative and safe disposal of commercial low-level radioactive waste. And I wondered when I read that why the state of Wisconsin would be withdrawing from this compact on safe disposal. And I have careful to watch the details related to nuclear power. It was something that came up in 2008 and 2009 when the Democrats had the control of the legislature, and there was a Clean Energy Jobs Act that actually removed the moratorium on nuclear power, something that I didn't favor. And I do think that it's prudent for us to watch carefully for what might be clues as to what the governor is thinking. And I thank Gordy for bringing up the issue, because it did help me connect a dot with a little piece of this budget that I didn't understand.
Thank you for that, Gordy. 1-800-228-5615 is the number for anyone else that would like to call in with their questions or comments. We've got a comment on our Facebook page. This comes from Janet, and I'm not sure what she's referring to, but here it is in plain English. How can you justify cutting taxes when there is such a huge deficit? Gas taxes need to rise, haven't been raised in years. Romaine Quinn, are there I'm not familiar with any large – actually, no, the governor has been talking about huge tax cuts in the budget. So what do you say to Janet?
Yeah, and so we're dealing with two issues here. So as you know, I mean, the budget will always balance mm-hmm. the general fund because we're constitutionally required to do that. And you can say there's little ways around that or out of that. But then there's the transportation fund, which doesn't have to not carry debt. And I would argue that there is room for some bonding because you pay for a project over the life of the project. So there's two pieces there. So the deficit, the large deficit, is looming in the transportation fund, not in the general fund. So currently, the governor's proposed budget, I think, reduces income taxes on the lowest two brackets. I think that costs a couple hundred million dollars. Doesn't cost. It just neuters government revenue because it gives you more of your own money back. And there's also some different reductions in other places. But you couple that with increases on spending on K-12, the UW system, and a lot of other areas. And that's being called for because of new projected revenues. We know that, you know, in early January, Fiscal Bureau said we're finishing this last fiscal year. We're going to carry over about $400 or $450 million in a surplus. And if you project revenue growth, and again, Senator Vinehout touched on this, and we've talked about that, we don't know what may be coming. And from what I've heard, and I guess I can follow up with the senator on her numbers, is that it's actually been getting better. So you can argue that you can't cut taxes when you run a deficit, and I think that's where kind of the Assembly Republicans come from, is when you have all this new revenue, let's pay for projects if you think we need the projects instead of putting it off to borrowing. And that's kind of been our position, is we're talking about spending a whole lot of money this budget. And again, this budget is the biggest budget in state history. So it's just a matter of where we want to prioritize those dollars. And I think not enough we're going towards transportation.
Senator Vinehout, Janet says, basically saying, how can you justify tax cuts at this point? What do you say to Janet?
Well, Janet's right, and it is an issue both in the general fund where we pay for schools and healthcare and local government and the UW system, and it's a problem in the transportation fund. The problem in the transportation fund is longstanding, and the state has been spending more than money coming into and stealing money from the general fund to make up for it. But when you look at what's happening, what the governor is proposing in the main fund, the general fund, he's spending about $200 million on some small tax cuts. It's going to amount to very little tiny bit of money for each individual. But because he's cutting everybody's taxes, it costs a lot of money. He's putting almost $100 million to write down or to offset property taxes through an arcane piece of a provision in the budget called the school levy tax credit. There's a sales tax holiday, which over a weekend in August, which is costing about $22 million. All these things are adding up to less money coming in. And I would respectfully disagree with Representative Quinn when he says that there's $450 million in new revenue. That number is really far. It's a comparison of the most recent nonpartisan Fiscal Bureau estimate of revenue with the governor's own lowball estimate, partisan estimate that he made in November. But if you compare like to like, which is only nonpartisan Fiscal Bureau numbers, the revenue estimates have been dropping, and they have dropped over the last 2 years. The state's economy is not recovering as originally anticipated by the nonpartisan Fiscal Bureau. So I don't expect there to be a great deal of new revenue. There is one-time spending in this budget that is, and they're spending more than is expected to have revenue to cover in the next budget. And I see, you know, different areas of the budget that that give me pause about where we're headed in the next budget. Things are not as they appear when you look at the details.
With regard to tax cuts, though, that gives people more, allows them to keep more of their money. And the argument is that that means they can then go out and spend more on whatever or save more and basically help spur the economy and get some more of those revenues up.
Yeah, well, that spending is going to be a nice meal on the town, and that's about the amount you're going to get as far as spending.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. I want to talk about education because that, along with transportation, is one of the biggest issues in the state budget. The governor is urging Republican colleagues in the legislature to keep his plan to boost funding for public schools by $649 million over 2 years. This comes as a proposal is rumored for a zero increase has been floating around the state legislature, according to some news articles. So, first of all, Romaine Quinn, have you heard about this zero increase proposal? And where do you stand on the governor's plan to boost to include this huge boost in spending for K-12?
Yeah, and so there's a number of positions that are being taken on this. And the governor's been traveling the state and talking about the increase. And we've had listening sessions now, and we've taken a lot of feedback on that. A number of issues arise with this, and it's also kind of the same thing that plays out with his proposal to cut UW tuition by 5%. Mm-hmm. Should we be doing that, especially since it's not indicative of a person's ability to pay? And the same thing happens with schools. As we know, not all schools are created equal in the state or in the funding formula. So why should a school that chronically spends less than others but produces a good product, a student that does that perform just like everyone else, why are they slated to get the same exact increase as other schools that have the ability to pay more and they're already spending much more than others? So I think a lot of us are looking at the increases not as a bad thing. And again, we want to invest in our K through 12 schools, which we have since I've been in office. But how to make it make the most sense? And I'm not sure that the largest chunk should go towards per pupil, which doesn't take into account a school district's ability to pay or property taxes or poverty and so on and so forth. But I do welcome the discussion, and I welcome it centering around the fact that we're trying to figure out how to give them more money, which we know is needed in many parts of our state.
The per pupil, I mean, isn't this kind of a different funding formula, too? I thought I remember reading that as soon as the budget first came out. So what don't you like about this per pupil plan that the governor has?
Right. Well, it'll be categorical outside of the regular formula. And for the most part, I'm generally supportive of categorical increases because we know, and I'm sure it's the same thing in Senator Devine-Holt's district, is because of a lack of students, our districts are geographically quite large, and therefore our property values are high, even though it may not be an indicator of our ability to pay, and so we get aided by the state a lot less. So I've got a district, for instance, that gets no money, period, from the state in general aid.
Wow.
But if you put it in categorical aid, it'll get to that district because it's outside of the formula. So I am supportive of that, but the point is if you're going to give roughly $400 per student over the end of the budget, per pupil, I've got a district that educates a kid for $9,500 a year. There are districts in, you know, Green Bay, I'll pick on my buddy Representative Mako, or other places that may spend $12,000 per student. So why should other places get the exact same amount per kid when you have districts that spend sometimes $1,000 or $2,000 less per student? And is that a fair appropriation? So I think that is a conversation that we're open to having and that we're going to have. Is determining with this investment, with the money that's proposed, is it going in the right area? And that's a conversation that's going on right now. So.
Other than the categorical aid, there was increases for high-cost transportation and for sparsity aid as well. What do you think about those?
Correct. I do welcome those increases, absolutely, because, again, they're categorical aids, and they target those districts that sometimes don't get a decent amount of funding from the general formula. So
sure. There
are those pieces, which, yes, I am supportive of, but they're small compared to the per pupil. The bulk of all the new money is going towards the per pupil categorically.
Senator Devine-Holt, your thoughts on the $649 million that the governor wants to increase for public K-12 education. What do you think about the categorical plan?
The representative did a great job of describing the problem. When we're looking right now at about 600 and some change, 600 million, and 500 million of that comes outside of the equalized aid formula. So that means that a school in River Hills or a school in Pepin gets the same amount. And there are major problems with the funding formula, and some of my superintendents, they don't want me to be in favor of changing the way the governor has set this up, because they want the money outside the formula because the formula, they say, is so broken. Mm-hmm. That said, I have told them and advocate for accepting Tony Evers' plan to change the formula and to pay a base of $3,000 per student of state money, and to allow for schools that have, for example, high-cost special ed students or high-cost students in poverty to build that into the formula, the students in poverty, so that the schools are getting money that more accurately reflect the costs of educating those students that come from backgrounds that need a little more help. Tony has put together a change in the formula, a comprehensive plan to deal with all the problems that have happened around the state. He did it in his 2011, his 2013, his 2015, and his 2017 budget. In each budget request, the governor rejected the changes in the formula and said, originally, we don't have enough money from it, and I heard it from a lot of legislators. Now he's putting just about the same amount of money that Tony suggested we put into schools, but he's not doing it in a way that changes the formula. So my suggestion to him and to all of my colleagues is to say, let's go back to Tony Evers' budget. We're going to go back to the base budget in transportation. Well, let's go back to the base budget in public education. Let's get rid of all this money, new money that's going to private schools, that's public money going to private schools, and instead let's really buckle down and change that formula. We can do it. The money is there. Tony showed us the way. Let's just get it done.
I've got two quick follow-ups with regard to education and the governor's plan, and I want to try to do it rapid fire because I want to get to a different subject, but the Joint Finance Committee shot down a proposal in the governor's budget that would delete a requirement that sets minimum hours of teaching in public and private schools. Kathleen Vinehout, did they make the right decision?
Yes, they did, and they took out a lot more policy related to education that needed to come out, but there's still a lot of policy in there that hasn't come out, and I'll be waiting to get rid of that too.
Romaine Quinn, your thoughts on the governor's idea about getting rid of the minimum hours of teaching for public and private schools?
Yeah, I think it was, I mean, it has merit, and it's worth a conversation, but I think it opens the door to a slippery slope, so I'm glad to see that it comes out so that if there is that discussion, it should happen in committee process, which, you know, would come through my committee. So I would like a say at it and an ability to ask questions on that. So I'm glad.
Whoop. Are you still there, Romaine?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay. You just dropped out right at the end there, but the other thing I wanted to bring up was the governor's. I think this is still in the budget. I don't think the Joint Finance Committee pulled it out. But the idea that to get this extra funding from that the governor is proposing, that school districts have to fully implement Act 10. That is, they have to make their employees pay 12% and 6%. I believe 12% for health insurance and 6% for pension. What are your thoughts on that, Romaine Quinn? Do you think that's a good idea?
I understand, again, the merit behind it, but it doesn't play out equally in each of our districts, who, in many of my districts, have carved their own path on how to reduce healthcare costs. So just tying it to that certain percentage is not reflective of what's happening locally, and so I believe a fix for that will be coming.
Senator Vinehout?
Absolutely, they made the right decision, and I would add the other thing that they did not take out, the Finance Committee did not take out, was tying all of the new aid for schools to the state's adoption of a self-financed insurance system.
Right. We're going to get to that in just a bit. 1-800-228-5615. We'll take a short break. We had a caller on the line, but they dropped out, so we've got three open lines. Let us know what you think. We're talking about the state budget with State Senator Kathleen Vinehout and State Representative Romaine Quinn. This is The West Side.
Every day we explore the people, places, and ideas that keep life interesting.
We create new opportunities at home, at work, and in our communities.
We connect with others who challenge and inspire us.
And we have fun because we love learning new things.
The Ideas Network.
Join us on the never-ending search for understanding.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the UW Flexible Option, offering University of Wisconsin degree and certificate programs designed to fit Wisconsin's future. More information is at flex.wisconsin.edu.
The Public Radio Word Game Show Says You is taping for its national broadcast in Eau Claire Saturday night at 7, May 6th at the Lismore. Tickets for Says You in Eau Claire are available online at wpr.org/100.
This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking about the state budget with two lawmakers from Western Wisconsin. In studio with me is Kathleen Weinhout. She's a Democratic state senator for the 31st Senate District based in Alma. Romaine Quinn is on the phone with us. He's a Republican state representative for the 75th State Assembly District. He is based in Chautauqua. Let us know what you think about the state budget. You can call in at 1-800-228-5615 or leave a question or a comment on our West Side Facebook page. Senator Weinhout brought it up, and it was one of the topics that I really wanted to talk about because the governor's budget included a lot of savings that was attributed to a change in how the state pays for insurance for its state workers. Full disclosure, WPR employees are state employees that get insurance through the state, and I just wanted to mention that. But the governor, instead of right now, we have what's called an HMO set up for health insurance, meaning that the state pays health insurance companies or conglomerates to take on the risk for the insurance of state employees. They pay out for the benefits. And the governor and the group insurance board has decided to go in a different direction, self-insurance. Other states do this. We heard that there could be a lot of savings or a lot of cost involved. So, Romaine Quinn, I wanted to ask you, where are you personally, and where do you think your colleagues on the Republican side of the aisle with self-insurance?
I think a lot of us are skeptical at best. And so this is an issue that's so large and potentially complicated that, again, I believe it deserves a lot more discussion. And I think a lot of us would like to weigh our input on it. And so I would advocate this piece comes out of the budget. I think a lot more discussion needs to be had because, frankly, we do have conflicting reports right now. And with the federal government totally up in the air on what they plan on doing with health care, I don't know why you would pick this year to look at drastically changing how we insure our state employees. So I personally would like to see that piece come out and handled totally separately so we can have that more open conversation and more of us can weigh in on it.
Senator Weinhout, your thoughts on where self-insurance, the idea is at in terms of the state budget?
It doesn't belong in the state budget. I think it's a very bad idea. Wisconsin over the years has saved money under the old system. We were a leader back in the 1980s that started this, what's called a managed competition system. It's really taken off in the Madison area where there are a lot of state employees. Costs have been kept low, and that's translated into less money that the state and the taxpayers have spent. I've looked into the provider that would cover the Western Wisconsin area, including all those state employees in Eau Claire. And the provider that they're talking about contracting with only has doctors and hospitals contracted in the cities. So I can't imagine anybody in Eau Claire is going to want to drive to the cities to get their basic primary health care taken care of. Not to mention the fact that we've got great health care systems right here in Eau Claire, and why we would send state money to Minnesota and not provide them with money with the business, I have no idea. So this is a bad idea. Absolutely, it needs to come out of the budget.
Here's a new wrinkle in this is when the State Employee Trust Funds Administrator was testifying before the Joint Finance Committee, she mentioned that the state would decrease the health insurance options for state employees from 18 to 6 as far as the HMOs, regardless of whether the legislature approves self-insurance or not. Kathleen Vinehout, I'll start with you. Do you see this as a power move to kind of persuade lawmakers?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what it is. And there's absolutely no reason to do that. And the outcome of it is that people are going to lose their primary care doctor, they're going to lose their local hospital, and they're going to have to drive a long way to get health care. And that makes no sense when we have the great providers we do in Western Wisconsin.
Romaine Quinn, your thoughts on the testimony from the Group Insurance Board administrator?
And I think this piece needs to come out of the budget. There needs to be a separate conversation. There clearly needs to be more input, I believe, from the legislature on these matters before any board is making decisions like this.
So does the Joint Finance Committee still have the ability to pull that out of the budget, or can lawmakers themselves, the legislature, assembly, Senate, pull it out? Does that work?
It is in statute, in the bill language, so it definitely could be amended. That said, there's a lot of language under the school section, Public Department of Education, DPI, that would have to come out, because the governor has tangled up these two issues, saying you're not going to get this money unless you get this done. So it's a big question about what he would veto, depending on what the legislature gave him.
And with that, I'm going to do a fatal move. I'm going to take a call with a few minutes to go. We are right at the end of the hour, so Dan and Eau Claire, what's on your mind? Very quickly, if you could.
Yeah, this will fit right in. I just want to thank both of the representatives. This is the first time in years that I've heard agreement on issues that seem to be moving in the right direction, and I would encourage them to start working together, because the taxpayers are tired of partisan politics, and it's very frustrating, and I'm really happy to see that there's some agreement, and I just hope they can push that forward to get things done.
Great. Thanks for the comment, Dan. And I will say that whenever I have lawmakers on the show, I think what you see in person is very different than what you see on the TV when you're watching sound clips. So believe it or not, lawmakers really are friends with each other, no matter what party they're in. With that, that's our time. I wish we had another hour to discuss this, because Lord knows we could fill it. My thanks to Kathleen Vinehout. She's a Democratic State Senator for the 31st Senate District based in Alma. My thanks to Romaine Quinn. He's a Republican State Representative for the 75th State Assembly District. He is based in Chautauqua. You guys were great this hour. That's our time. I'd also like to thank Team Westside, including Henry Lippold for producing the hour, Mort Cypress for handling on-air production, Allison Secord for promotions, and of course Kate Spranger and Dean Collenbeck. Next week, we'll take a look at Western Wisconsin's housing market. Have a safe and productive week. I'll chat again with you next Monday morning.